Welcome to the Simply Authentic Podcast with Angie and Tanya. We are real estate pros, entrepreneurs, leadership gurus, and community enthusiasts. Our passion is sharing our experiences to enrich the lives of others. We hope to inspire you to live authentically.
Simply Authentic is the podcast where realtors and referral partners get the conversations they actually want to hear. I'm Crystal Forbes with Great American Title, a family-owned and operated title company with over 30 years serving the real estate community. We provide title and escrow services for both Missouri and Kansas with locations throughout Southwest Missouri. We focus on providing exceptional customer service and trustworthy, reliable title insurance coverage. Our relationships with other industry professionals are why we are able to make dreams come true one closing at a time. That's why Great American Title is proud to sponsor the Simply Authentic podcast, bringing the most relevant, real, and sometimes challenging conversations that help all of us get better. Tune in, subscribe, and let's keep this industry moving forward together. Simply Authentic, recorded at the Gershman Mortgage Studios, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Simply Authentic podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings. And today, Tanya, we are talking title work.
Title work, all things title.
And a lot of people just do not understand title work. They don't know what it's about. They don't know about title insurance. So we hope that by the time that we're wrapped up today, that you have a better understanding about what title is, why it's important, why title insurance is important.
Yes.
And hopefully for you realtors out there, you'll have a better understanding about how to actually look at the title work and what should stand out to you. So we're very excited today to have two distinguished guests with us from Great American Title. We have Crystal Forbes. She is the escrow operations manager, and Lacey Pattison, who is their quality assurance manager. So welcome ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Yes, we're excited to get into this. Yeah. Although some of it is going to be technical, we welcome you to explain it the best that any of us can understand, because even realtors have a hard time understanding some of these terms and technicalities occasionally.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit about each of you and what your background is, how long you've done this, and what other related fields you've been in.
Okay. So I've been in the industry for about 30 years. I actually started in banking when I started college, and then I became a mortgage lender, and I did that for about 19 years.
Okay.
And then I decided to try this, title. You know, what is I wanted to understand about the title role, basically, title world. And so I came over here, and I've been doing that for 11 years.
Okay.
So, yeah,
it's
been a long time. A minute.
And I actually started working at a title company when I was 16. I just started working for a couple hours a day after school, just with some light administrative duties, mailing out recorded docs, making labels for files, you know. And I really liked it. And so I went on full time after graduation. And not long after that, our closer resigned. And so I was just thrust into the escrow world very quickly. And I went ahead and got my degree in accounting and business management. But this has just been a passion, and I liked it. It was a fit. So I stuck with it. I've been with Great American since 2005. And this is kind of all I've done.
It sounds like a lifetime of title.
I've had many different roles since I've been here, but I've been here.
You know, for our clients, when the only thing they ever know is the person that they see across the closing table from them. And what they don't understand is what goes on behind the scenes. And I think both of you have been closers, right?
Yes.
So if you've closed at Great American, you may have seen one of these ladies in the past, but you've stayed with the company and grown. And so we're going to talk a lot about what goes on behind the scenes, because that's what people just don't know about.
Right. So to get us started, tell us and our average listener, what is title insurance and why do we need it?
Okay. So title insurance is basically ensuring that the property's title is clear of any legal issues, liens, or encumbrances before the sale or transfer of the property.
Okay.
That's really what it is.
Right.
It's that
mm-hmm.
simple.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. we want to make sure that there's not a cloud or any previous bill that
yes.
maybe the owners have now or even could have been attached at some time in a previous ownership.
Exactly.
We want to be sure at closing that there is no cloud
yes.
on the title.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Yeah. yeah. We're going to do a search of public records to verify that the seller has the right to transfer the ownership.
True. Yeah.
And we're going to protect, you know, both the buyer and the lender in the entire process.
Yes.
We also manage the closing process, handle the documentation, and then provide the title insurance.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us what the title insurance is for and when it starts and what it covers.
Okay. So for a homeowner or a buyer, the title insurance policy that they purchase at closing covers them up to the date of purchase, the date that title is transferred,
okay.
With a standard owner's policy. There is an enhanced policy that does cover some title defects going forward.
Okay.
I did not bring notes on that, but we could provide a handout if anybody's interested that really outlines the difference between a standard owner's policy and the okay. enhanced policy.
Okay.
I think the enhanced policy is really a good thing and worth every penny because it protects you going forward too, not just backwards.
Okay.
So yeah, like Crystal said, the policy is going to protect them if the title company misses something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, obviously we don't ever want to have a claim,
mm-hmm.
but we are all human.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if there weren't claims, then title insurance underwriters wouldn't be a business.
Wouldn't be a
right?
reason
right.
for
right.
it.
There
right.
wouldn't
right.
be a reason
right.
for it. So,
right.
That's on the buyer side. It's going to protect against any clouds on title or liens that don't get paid off or missed at closing.
Okay.
And then for the lender, of course, they're getting a title insurance policy that says they're in first lien position. It
mm-hmm.
ensures that they're in
right.
first lien position in case they ever have to foreclose on the property.
Okay.
And to be clear, if you're getting a loan, the lender's going to require that
yes,
you get
correct.
Title insurance,
yes,
correct?
Right. Yes.
I've had people who have paid cash who have said, I don't want title insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine
mm-hmm.
taking that kind of a risk.
Me neither.
Especially for relatively, it's relatively inexpensive
mm-hmm.
compared to other insurance. I just can't imagine not doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same.
And
it
Yeah, I'm so
ahead.
Sorry. And you pay it one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like
right.
your homeowners
right.
or your car insurance where you have to pay premiums every year or month. You pay it one time and it protects you for as long as you own the home,
right.
the property.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very
yeah.
important.
Yeah.
yeah.
So I'd like for you to tell our listeners, just give an example of some things that you have seen as far as clouds on title. I know I've had situations where it was a marital claim that like maybe their divorce decree wasn't recorded properly
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and we've had to chase down exes,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I've also seen weed liens against
yeah.
properties. So what yeah. what else have you guys, do you see on a regular basis or have
Something
you seen?
We're seeing our underwriters put out, you know, multiple memos on is in 2020, obviously some people were unfortunate and they lost their jobs. Therefore,
mm-hmm.
they got behind on their mortgage
uh-huh.
and they did what they called or thought was a modification to their current
uh-huh.
first.
Mm-hmm.
What it actually was a second
mm-hmm.
lien on the property. Therefore, when we go to get the payoff, there are two.
Oh.
And so a lot of people do not understand that. They really think they just owe Wells Fargo, you know, U.S. Bank. They don't realize that they have this second payoff with HUD. So
oh.
that's something that
interesting.
We
yeah.
have seen.
They weren't required to make monthly payments on
yeah.
those, but the debt is still owed. And
sure.
so we've had some
tacked on.
Surprised sellers. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
I bet.
And
yeah.
it can really change. You know, we're dealing with one now that is large, and it can really change the bottom line for those
mm-hmm.
sellers. So
of
it's
course.
Super important mm-hmm. to know about, but they did it. They were probably in a high stress situation trying
yeah.
to save their home and
mm-hmm.
they've forgotten about it.
Mm-hmm. So this mm. brings to mind, and not a current conversation I'm having with sellers, but it might be a good question for us realtors
mm-hmm.
to ask when we're at the table going over just various things that we talk about. Is your house in a trust? It, you know, anything that might affect title.
Yeah.
Asking, during the 2020 years when the real estate market, you know, fell and then rose so much, was there any hardships in there that you had to do a loan modification? That's a great tip for us that we've never heard that. I've never heard anybody say that.
And something to watch for when you get your title work. Is there is there only one deed of trust or are there two? Did your seller tell you they're only making one mortgage payment, their only payoff is with Wells Fargo or whomever? And then you get title work back and you see that second with HUD. That's kind of, halt. Like we do have to obviously get that deed of trust released.
Of course.
So the buyers have clear title. And like I said, sometimes sellers don't understand that they actually owe that debt.
Yeah,
for sure.
They have to pay it off. There's a monetary value that has to be paid off at closing.
I would say, the most common thing we see is simple. Like, I purchased this in 2010 and that mortgage still exists with the previous seller. And that's a simple phone call to either the title company that closed it, getting verification that it was paid off, and then the proof, and then getting with the bank for that release, because releases do get missed.
You know, that happen.
But sometimes I would say some of the hardest things for us to clear are like a situation where it was an owner financed, a seller finances the loan, and then they've passed away, you know, something like that. So there's different circumstances, but that's something difficult. So
And as far as you mentioned, Angie, a divorce, you know, change in marital status, and we've both seen people have to be chased down to come back, you know, ex-spouses, and that's not always a pleasant conversation. So what potentially happened, do you think, with a lot of those? Were the right paperwork just not recorded? Or the recorded paperwork maybe didn't match what the decree said.
A lot of people do not understand that in the state of Missouri, if you are married and you purchase, let's say you're in the middle of a divorce, but you go ahead and you purchase a property, it's a marital interest state. And so your spouse still has marital interest until that divorce is final and official, you know, with the courts. And then after that, a quit claim deed would be recorded, removing that spouse, you know, from the property. So that's something we see a lot where they just don't understand.
And I would say this is not that unusual to see the quit claim deed that was prepared by maybe not a title company in a closing transaction. Maybe it was prepared by an attorney through the divorce, and it doesn't state the marital status of the spouse. And so we need it re-executed, and now they're married. That's
that's another complication. And I've also seen troubles with death. So somebody dies, and then there are actually previous wives or husbands that have interest in that, whereas that, you know, at the time of their death, the family believes, no, they were divorced 25 years ago, but something didn't get recorded correctly, and now they have an interest in that. That's difficult.
Very difficult.
And might be, do you ever have anything that's impossible?
I mean,
like, we cannot get this to happen.
Yeah, we cannot clear this. I mean, unfortunately with liens sometimes. So if you've, like I stated before, let's say it was a seller owner finance. And they have passed. There are certain rules per our underwriters that we have to wait multiple years after that note would mature. And a lot of times that, you know, there's nobody that can release that except for the owner.
That's right.
And so I would say that's probably a situation. Most are fixable. We had two sisters one time that decided to purchase property next door to each other. Great idea. But then they decided to build a garage in the middle. And not even thinking about this encroachment on both of their properties. One of them had to do a survey. And they had to put their house and the garage on that. And that was a beautiful piece of property. But then the other, unfortunately, had a very tiny lot because, you know, it was an encroachment. And so situations like that, if they're willing to do it,
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a nightmare. You're like,
and a nightmare. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some screaming behind the scenes.
No kidding.
You know, there's also tax liens. I mean, you see that quite often, right? And when someone tells me that they think they have a lien or that they had a lien, but now they've paid it off, I always encourage them to get a pre now I just lost my train of thought.
Like a title search?
Title search, uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Right up front. Before we even list it. Because obviously, we're doing seller proceed sheets when we list. And we want to know that the seller's going to walk away with X amount of money. And that they're comfortable with that, with what we're listing at. And if they think that there could be a lien, it might be a good idea for us to call a title company and get that.
Highly recommend that. No surprises. Then you know going forward, you know, some people will come in with a death situation and they'll be like, my father passed away. I don't have a clue. You know, I don't know what's on here. And that's what we always recommend because then we can start right then, right? You know, they might have to go through probate or something, but at least we're getting them started down the correct path.
Right. Very important. And just to know, peace of mind of knowing.
Peace of mind, ahead of time.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Us too. I mean, it gives us peace of mind
because
I know I can help them. You know, because sometimes it's very nerve-wracking when someone walks in and they say, oh, I just ran into this person on the street. They want to sell me this property. And of course, all my red flags are going up.
Right.
But it might be totally legit and fine.
Yeah, true. How do you come up with what the cost is for a title policy? What is that based on?
Sure. So title insurance premiums are filed in the state of Missouri. They're filed by title insurance underwriters. Okay. So our underwriters file a schedule of rate premiums with the Department of Insurance. As a title insurance agent, we have to collect those filed rates.
Okay.
And the title premiums are based on the sales price and or loan amount, depending on if it's a purchase with financing or a refi or whatever. Regarding any other title fees, with the exception of recording fees, which obviously are set by the state, those are at the discretion of the title company.
Okay. That tells a lot. And if you were talking to a newer realtor and they were to say, look, this title policy you just sent me is a big bunch of garbage that I have no idea what it says other than it's got a parcel legal description and I think you've got my parties on here correct. What else does this mean?
I would first suggest, hey, let us come in and do a little training.
Yes.
Because that is priceless. I mean, relationships, they're key in what we do, and that is one big way to build it, is start with an agent that is brand new, and they're just learning, and be their resource. You know, I always, we want to make everybody in the transaction look as good as they can at that closing table, and so fool everybody. Let them, you know, think they've been doing it for years and years, and so if we educate them and help them with the title commitment, then they would, you know, they would know, and we're happy to come in and do a training. But I would say there's many places to look, but most importantly, look at who's vested. Look at, does your seller have the right to sell this property? Believe it or not, a lot of times we do get those contracts in and we're like, who's this? This is the owner, you know, and so we're trying to put those pieces together. And then there's two areas of a commitment. Looks a lot, you know, it's a lot, it looks a lot more than it is.
Yes.
I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but there are two main areas, your requirements and your exceptions. Your requirements are going to be met to move forward with the property, the new buyer, to move forward with the property with no liens or anything like that moving forward. Your exceptions, though, are going to stay on the property. So CC&Rs, an easement, a utility easement, something like that. There's nothing that we can do about those. Those are going to stay on the property forever. So that would be my quick version, you know, of what to look for.
And I think the exceptions are often overlooked. People don't think about looking there. They grab their, you know, Schedule A and see, you know, my sellers are Right. My sellers, they mm-hmm. do own the property,
right.
And they look at their requirements. Oh, good, they've only got one payoff, and yeah. there's no tax liens. We're good to go. Mm-hmm. But the exceptions mean a lot to the buyer. Mm-hmm. You know, they might not it's have true. Known that there were CCRs on the property, or there mm-hmm. is a setback line, yep. or a utility easement that might hinder them from moving forward with plans they had made. You
true.
Know,
yeah. good
with
point.
The property.
Yeah.
So the exceptions are something they should definitely go over too.
Yeah.
So just for our listener, CC&Rs, that's your covenants and restrictions. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a subdivision, very often there are covenants and restrictions, and the use of your property will be limited to what those CC&Rs cover. So so that's going to be an exception, yes. like you said. Couple of things there. For CC&Rs, you guys have records of what every subdivision in just Green County or beyond Green County?
No, beyond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if there's a question, if a client out there has a question about whether they can put up an 8-foot fence, you know, ask your realtor to get a copy of the CC&Rs. And if the listing agent doesn't have them, the title company in Great American yeah. can pull yeah. that
we
for you.
We get requests all the time yeah. for a copy yeah. of the CC&Rs, oftentimes like when somebody's looking at signing a contract.
Right.
Know, yeah.
For
yeah.
a listing.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What about trusts? So if I go on an appointment and I fail to ask that question, and honestly, sometimes people can't remember
yeah.
if it's in a trust, you I know, so that. Even if you've asked it and they say, no, Bob and Jane own it, you
yeah.
know,
mm-hmm.
then title work gets pulled mm-hmm. and it's in a trust. What documentation do you need for that property to be sold out of that trust?
The only thing that we require is the most simplified answer is a certificate of trust. So okay. all that is something an attorney would prepare, and they basically would state the name of the trust mm-hmm. and who the trustees of the trust are. If they're able to, you know, sell the real estate in the trust, that sort of thing.
Right.
Sometimes that is not prepared. And so then there are certain sections of the trust that we would ask to get a copy of.
Okay.
But we do have to have either or, because we have to know that it's okay, you
yeah.
know, who can sign and yeah, mm-hmm. that it's okay to do this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then buying in a trust. Do you need any part of the trust to be able to purchase in the trust?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Either the certificate of the trust, okay. which the most important thing for buyers is either the certificate of the trust or a section in their trust agreement should spell out how they should hold title to the property.
Okay.
That's
very
you
important.
Know, and that okay. and that the trust has the powers to purchase, mortgage, real estate, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera.
True.
So
yeah.
you want to see the powers of the trust, who the trustees are, and how they should hold title to real estate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to back up. I knew there was two things I wanted to ask about.
Okay.
And I remembered one.
Okay.
And I forgot the other. The other was, let's say that title work comes back and there is a problem. What is your process? Do you pick up the phone and call? What's your process for handling that?
We would pick up the phone and call. We're going to try to solve that without involving anyone else, if at all possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Sometimes we do have to go back to the previous title company that did the, you know, the sale.
Mm-hmm.
And so they would have probably issued the owner's policy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would rely on them to assist us. But I would say, you know, we try to solve it on our own without mm-hmm. going that direction.
Mm-hmm. And does it happen a lot that you have to go back to that previous owner's policy?
No, most problems
okay.
we can solve.
Okay.
You know, it's something easy to solve as long as you can find all the people. I
right.
would say that's your hardest thing is when you're going back
yeah.
in the chain, maybe a couple owners, that can get difficult. But
yeah.
if you start calling and you start asking, people know people, you know.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
Most
yeah.
of the time it can be solved with some work, a little bit of work.
Yeah.
And Facebook.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
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 Online,
we
investigating,
all
stalk, right, trying to
yeah.
find somebody.
Stalk, investigate.
I mean, I always say we put
yeah.
our
more than
investigator
once.
Hat.
Yeah.
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 Because,
yeah.
you know, you have to. I'll
you're right.
Like, let's think through
mm-hmm.
this. And
yeah.
somebody
from two owners
there.
Ago
yeah.
back in the chain that we need to get some
mm-hmm.
something
yeah.
cleaned
mm-hmm.
up, you know. And
yeah.
You hunt them down.
Yeah.
You hunt them down.
Yeah.
We had mentioned tax liens. You did a few minutes ago. And when there is a tax lien found on a property, does that become first place over the mortgage holder?
Hmm.
Ooh, have I stumped you?
You have. You have. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. I would have to defer to our
I've always heard manager. That it does.
I have too.
And you guys can get back to us and we'll put a little Facebook, you know, post on question answer. But I've always heard that it does. But I can't, I've had agents have tax lien problems, but they were much bigger than, you know, this seller is selling and has a tax lien and a mortgage. It was much, it was like a previous owner tax lien, not even the current owner. Something that got missed or attached later or something, who really knows. But
when they're delinquent on their taxes and it gets sold on the courthouse steps, it creates a lot. A lot to learn and, you know. That's something you should know all the ins and outs before you purchase something on the courthouse steps.
And many times for those people who show up to with cash on hand to buy those houses, you don't know that situation unless you, they've called you and said, can you do a preliminary search for me, right?
And we have, we do see that, but it's always a rush. You know, because they're like, we just found out this is selling tomorrow. But still, even if there isn't anything, there are certain rules, you know, that even though they've paid it, the owner of the property still has the right to come back and pay their taxes.
And once you purchase property at a tax sale, you can't get title insurance for a certain amount of time and certain requirements have to be met. So if you're going to purchase property at a tax sale and you're intending on turning around and selling it in a few years, the buyer, you know, especially if they're getting a mortgage, and so the lender's going to require title insurance, they might not be able to.
And I don't
I'm not an expert on that either, so I don't want to give it's you facts on the timelines and stuff.
But. So that would be a question for the buyer of that house that got foreclosed on or sold on the courthouse steps or whatever the situation, the buyer would need to ask you not only maybe to do a preliminary title search, but to, and they may do that afterwards, who knows, you know, they may purchase and then do the title search, but they would need to know and ask that question, can you insure this property for me? And can the next buyer, because most of these people who buy those houses on the courthouse steps, most of them are flipping them, right? Well, they might keep them as a rental, but a lot of them are flipping them and reselling them in 90 days or less if they can. So
and they might run into issues with the end buyer being able to purchase title insurance.
Okay, didn't know that.
Interesting.
Tanya,
I think it's a good time to take a break.
It
what
is,
do you think?
Ladies. Let's take a break.
We need to hear from our sponsors. And we're back.
We're back with Great American Title. Lacey and Crystal are with us today. So if you're just tuning in, you're going to want to rewind this episode. It is all about title work and why and all of the issues that could come up possibly and or how to pivot from those issues. So thank you for educating us today. I have a question about death. So if you have a couple that owns a house and one of the spouses dies, what are they going to have to supply to be able to sell that house?
We prefer the death certificate, and we will record that.
Okay.
But we also can do a death recital on the warranty deed.
All right.
That's it.
So a couple ways to deal with it.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty easy.
Straightforward.
Okay.
I have a question about one time I closed on a property, and I had I represented the seller, but I had represented her as a buyer, and there was a weed lien, and that doesn't mean they were smoking weed in the property. That means...
I mean, it could these days.
It could. It might. But it means their yard got too tall, and Cindy had to come and mow that yard, and then once compensation for that, they charged the seller, and the seller of the property did not pay that weed lien, but it wasn't caught when she purchased. It was caught when she went to sell. Now, thankfully, it was only like $60 or something. But so my question is, are there different types of searches that different title companies do, or
no, I mean different areas that we search, I would say.
And something like that should be picked up. You know, I wonder if it was a situation where the lien hadn't been filed.
That's what I was wondering.
Okay.
We also have different plants, title plants. You know, you build your title plants. So, but that's what I was going to say. Was it recorded or filed at the time of the closing?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or was it after?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
And there would be a recording date on it, right? Yeah. Just in case filed. You wanted to get to the bottom of it and say, you know, it just so happens this weed lien was recorded after her date of purchase.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Okay. And that's something else that we do behind the scenes that you might not know is you've got your title commitment that was issued as of a certain date and you've got your effective date. But right before closing, we do a pre-clear. So we do a gap search from the date of the effective date of the commitment to that day.
Okay.
So we make sure nothing else has been filed right before closing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And does your commitment date go back to the date of the contract, or does it start the date it's completed in the company, in your company?
The date it's completed.
Okay.
And your effective date might be a couple days prior to when we actually did our search, because the records, the title plant or online records might only be updated as of a couple days ago, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. How big is Great American Title? How many locations do you have?
We have 13 escrow offices.
Okay.
And then our headquarters is here in Springfield.
Okay. So your title plant is here in Springfield.
Correct.
Okay. Very good.
And on staff, you guys have, talk to our listeners about how many positions there are, not necessarily how many, but like you have attorneys on staff. Yes.
We have an attorney.
Okay.
We don't have one on staff, but we have a real estate attorney that we would refer to, you know, if we needed him.
Okay.
But not on staff. We have a little under, I think, 100 employees. Mm-hmm. One really cool thing about Great American Title is we have different processes and steps for extra...
Separation of duties.
Yes, separation of duties. So, for example, if I close a file, I am going to give my paperwork to our post-closing department. This is all behind scenes while you guys are still, you know, conversing with the buyer and the seller. We go ahead and send them our documentation, and they're reviewing that, and then they actually fund and disperse the checks.
Okay.
So we do not do on our own. And so it's something.
It's kind of a system of checks and balances and a separation of duties between departments that I think is not just unique to us, but it is unique to, we've grown to this, to a size where we were able to do that, where sometimes smaller title companies, you might not see those different departments that we have in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Something our underwriter appreciates, because we do have multiple eyes, you know, on it.
I think it's something our escrow staff and closers appreciate too, not having to fund their own files or record their own documents or do their own policies, which I've
done
that before.
Right.
I did that, you know, 15 years ago. I did that.
Yeah.
We did it all. So it's nice.
And 13 offices, and so how many counties are you serving in that?
Well, we serve all of what we can do. Title insurance in Kansas and Missouri, any county.
Okay.
Anywhere in the entire state.
Okay.
We have offices from Joplin, Springfield, down to Branson, up to Lake of the Ozarks, and kind of everywhere in between. But we can do title insurance and closings for any counties in Kansas or Missouri.
Okay.
Yep. Good to know.
I have had a longstanding relationship with Great American Title, and have used mostly the Nixa office. I've been everywhere, but Sherry Doran has been my closer for many years down there. And Linda Smith, one of your former employees, a great friend of mine, I just want to give you guys some props for helping agents and helping buyers and sellers when there is a problem. Mm-hmm. And I have had personal conversations with your examiners to understand, you know, what something meant and what it was and how it got there and how to resolve it. So, so it's important. We're going to talk about relationships and you mentioned earlier, this is a relationship business that not only do realtors rely on you guys to help us, our clients out of situations, but personal situations sometimes arise too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so I've, you know, spoken to the examiner before, and he's given me a lot of good advice. So appreciate you guys and the hard work you do and,
Thank you, behind the scenes,
how you help.
Thank you. Yeah, we really take a lot of pride in offering exceptional customer service. We really push that and take pride in that.
We do.
Well, let's shift gears just a little bit and talk about maybe a little bit about 1031 exchange. Now, 1031 exchange is something that is very involved, and we may have to have you guys back to have a different conversation, a more in-depth conversation, because, you know, we do have, as an aging society, we have a lot of people out there who maybe have built a portfolio of several properties, and they're wondering how they can cash out on one, but they don't want to pay all the taxes on that. And the rules change on 1031s all the time. So I always tell my client, I am not the expert. I mean, I know just a little bit, but we're going to get you with somebody who can really walk you through that. And I know you guys have been good. You've come over to my office and talked about 1031 exchanges and really helped us understand what we need to know so that we can further help our clients, because that's what it's all about. So talk a little bit about what a 1031 is and maybe just some things you've seen with that.
Okay. So a 1031 exchange is a tax strategy that investors can use to defer paying capital gains taxes when they're selling an investment property with the intention of using the proceeds from that sale to reinvest in the purchase of more investment property. It has to be a like-kind exchange, and I get that question a lot. What is like-kind? If I sold an apartment complex, do I have to buy an apartment complex? No. Real estate is like-kind to real estate. So if you sell an apartment complex, you could buy undeveloped land, or you could sell undeveloped land and purchase a commercial building, you know. So real estate is like-kind to real estate. And another thing is you're deferring your capital gains taxes. You're kind of kicking the can down the road, right? Because you're reinvesting. That's one thing. You're not getting out of paying taxes forever. Defer that. Eventually you're going to have to cash out. And so you're going to have to pay taxes. That, I think, is another thing that's kind of misunderstood. So for us, what we do in the 1031 exchange process is we act as the qualified intermediary for the exchanger. We make sure that the exchange complies with the IRS's safe harbor rules. So the IRS regulations state you have to have a qualified intermediary. The exchanger cannot be in possession of the proceeds. So they have to be held in an account that is handled by the qualified intermediary. So as the QI, we facilitate the sale of the relinquished property, hold the funds until they're ready for the to close on their replacement property. And we work with the title company. It's not always Great American Title. We can do 1031 exchanges through our company, Asset Transition, and work with any title company. And we often do. A lot of times there's somebody selling property here and purchasing something in Florida. So, you know, we work work with title companies all over the United States and just make sure that the investor is compliant with those IRS regulations. There are deadlines that have to be met, and the settlement statement has to be set up a certain way and certain documents. So,
do you get frequent phone calls from the public that you know need to or want to do a 1031 exchange?
Yes.
I would think that would be a common question.
And we have a lot of repeat customers. Like I said, it is not uncommon at all for us to be handling a 1031 exchange that Great American Title isn't maybe closing. Of course, it makes the process a lot easier when it's internal, but we're happy to work with any title company.
Because you can, being the intermediary, you can manage the money and be the escrow account to hold that money, and then they're actually buying in Florida, like you said, and they're closing down there.
And one thing that another thing that comes up more often than I'd like to see is you've got to have this done and set up ahead of time. You can't close and get your check and then, oh, my buddy or my attorney said I need to do a 1031. Can we set that up? No, we can't after the fact. Everything is done. Make sure you've got those things lined out ahead of time, because once you are in receipt of those funds, we can't backtrack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those IRS rules that you were kind of talking about, I mean, you've got to identify a property. You can identify up to three properties. And then you have to meet certain deadlines to close and that kind of thing.
And we're going to be able to line all that out ahead of time. So when they close on the sale of their relinquished property, they understand those deadlines. If we haven't heard from them and our 45-day window is coming up, we're going to reach out and remind them. Have you changed your mind? Did you not find any replacement property? We'll help keep them in line so they make sure and comply with those regulations.
That's good.
Yeah.
How often do you have somebody not follow the rules or try to get involved and make decisions that you all have to control, like the money, the escrow, the...
I don't think we have people who try to go outside of those regulations. We just have people who don't understand the rules. And I think most people, they don't want to mess with the IRS. So we don't have pushback.
The implication is big.
I mean, you know, they might have had something in mind, and sometimes the rules don't fall in line with what they were planning, and there is some disappointment. But that's why I prefer that we talk to people ahead of time before they close on their relinquished property. Don't go into it blind. Ask the questions up front before you close. Make sure you understand your deadlines and identifying property, because there are different rules. I won't go into that because we could spend an hour talking about it.
That's why we may have to do another episode about 1031s, because they are, I don't think the general public really knows much, or they again just know what it's called, and they think that it's a tax break, or they think it's a tax, you know, what you said in the beginning with it being you're going to be taxed at some point. It's just not right now.
Not
today.
And it could be your heirs end up being taxed for that, or your estate is taxed. So it's going to happen. But I think the my general rule of thumb, and when I'm talking to my agents and training them, is if you're having a conversation with a client who thinks they want to do a 1031, then we need to put them in contact with the title company right away, so that I don't want the liability of telling them wrong on these dates and these timelines, because that is so critical to them being successful in that exchange.
Yeah, and that's another thing we get a lot of questions about, whether or not their particular situation, whether it's a good fit for their particular situation financially. We are not their CPA. We are not their attorney. So we can tell them the rules and what we have to do to comply and make sure they're set up, you know, for a successful exchange. But when we're talking crunching numbers, they need to get with their CPA or a tax attorney. Like, we recommend that often. That's a lot of the questions that we get, you know, they're trying to crunch numbers, and we're not going to be able to offer them advice on whether it fits their particular situation.
So everybody's so different.
So
we talk a lot about leadership on the podcast, and both of you are in a leadership role. You've both been through multiple areas of the company. So tell us what it's like to manage and be a part of a large organization like yours, and what you've learned most through the years about trying to lead people the best way. We all learn from our mistakes the best, right? But what have you learned from being in your leadership roles about dealing with other people?
Lacey and I both try to be very available to the escrow staff and others. You know, Lacey's, I just have the escrow staff, but she has really the whole company that depend on her for certain questions and answers. And so we try to be available. I think that's the key, but obviously we're just, you know, we're two people. And so if it's urgent, you know, we really want to be there for them, because obviously someone on the other side is our client, our customer that needs to get their check. The seller needs to get their check. They need to get out the door, that kind of thing. And so with the computers, you know, they're great when they work and everything flows, but sometimes there's just a little hiccup that they might need us to help with. I think back to relationships, relationships are key in everything that we do, in every aspect, in my opinion, including I need to have relationships with the escrow staff so they feel comfortable to come to me with suggestions, problems, either internally or, you know, it might be a personal problem that they need to discuss, and they need to understand that I'm going to keep that confidential. Or handling situations. We have a lot of two people offices, you know, sure. And so you have to handle that really carefully.
Sure.
But I think the main thing that I've learned is people want to be appreciated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I try to understand their love language. You know, yeah. A lot of people don't know theirs, but if you pay attention,
yeah.
You can quickly figure it out. Yeah. And I try to pay attention to that and then reward them accordingly.
Yeah.
Definitely not perfect, but that's what I want. And so, you know, yeah. And I think all of us want a pat on the back. It might not be publicly, but you know, we all want that. And so that's what I try to do is just be there, support them, listen, and be someone that they can trust and know that maybe they just need to vent. You know, maybe it's just a bad day.
Yeah.
What we do is really stressful at times. You know, we try to go into the closing room and because it's such an exciting day. Mm-hmm. It's a huge transaction. We rarely do anything bigger in our lives.
Right.
And so it's a so huge true. Thing to be a part of. And that's what I love. I love seeing that first time home buyer sitting there with their baby, you know, and you just know that they're going to go love it. They're going to love having a house and everything that comes with it. So,
I think she hit the nail on the head for me with fostering relationships with our employees, creating an environment where they trust us, we're there, or make ourselves available to them. Mm-hmm. They know we're going to have their back and support them, and they can come to us with issues without being fearful of consequences. We're going to help them through it and help them figure it out. Mm-hmm. I try to help them sometimes figure it out on their own so they can grow, you know, and learn.
Yeah.
And I think that goes really far. Without that, I can't effectively communicate with them, you know, and we're not working towards a common goal. If we don't have a relationship and there's not trust between us and they don't know I've got their back, then we're not working towards a common goal, right? And at the end of the day, we're all working together as a team. Mm-hmm. And I just don't, I don't think you can do that without those relationships.
Agreed.
And those relationships extend to the realtors that you serve and that kind of thing. I think Tanya and I probably both do this. When we have new agents and we're training them, we're going to tell them that one of the most important things you can do is create those relationships with lenders that you trust, with title companies that you trust. We cannot do our job without all these ancillary services.
Same.
And as you said, we hope that the most exciting day is closing day. We want everybody to walk away just feeling really good, but there are hiccups, there are ups and downs. This is not a perfect, it's not always a perfect transaction. As much as we would love to make it that way, there are things that are beyond our control. And I really, you know, what's interesting about what you guys do is that we've dealt with our clients, both sides, we've dealt with the other realtor all along. You guys sometimes don't see us until we are at the, or don't communicate really, no reason to communicate until we get to the closing table. What I always try to do is if there is an issue, I try to let my closing company know because I don't want anybody blindsided, right?
Yeah.
I want you to know that this has been, this is a divorce situation. It's been a struggle from the get-go. Mm-hmm. It's so that you can be mentally prepared because you're all going about your day thinking, yay, we're going to close the deal today.
And we're walking in with a landmine.
We're going to offer two separate closing times, you know, because we don't want anyone to be uncomfortable any more than we want to be.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So most of the time I'll be like, well, why don't they come in at 3? You're coming in at 4. Yeah. You know, let's let's make this convenient. We can still get them. If it's a seller, we can still get the money to you.
Yes.
You know, you can, I can even alert you once everybody's left. There are ways to handle that.
Yes.
There's also situations where people are more of a reader. They're going to want to read every document, which is totally fine.
Yeah.
But sometimes an hour doesn't warrant for that.
That's
so, you know, you guys are really great about giving us a heads up. And that way we can send them the packet before they
ahead of time.
You know, even though nothing can really be changed at that point. But at least they can get an understanding.
Yeah. And ask questions ahead of time if they have them.
Yeah.
All of those things make our relationships with one another imperative for a successful closing.
Yes.
So you're right. Absolutely. All of those things. I was sitting there thinking when she was talking about a divorce situation, and I was thinking about the reader.
Yes. The reader.
You're going to need to send that out a couple days ahead, maybe a week sometimes.
There'll be sometimes we send in backup because, you know, that closer might be back to back to back all day.
Yes.
And we don't want to make a big deal or make them uncomfortable.
Right.
But it definitely affects our day. And so we might send in another closer to sit with them, or we might even say, we're going to give you the room for a minute.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let us know when you feel comfortable proceeding.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. And I really appreciate that. I'll never forget. I had a new agent come to me right after his first closing, and he said, I'll never go back there. And I said, why? And he said, because she explained nothing. She just shoved the piece of paper over to them and said, sign here, sign here, sign here. And we all do this every day, right? This is something that we're used to. When we stop having the ability to understand that the person sitting across from us is not that, we should hang it up because we're not doing a service. We are actually doing a disservice to them. They need to understand what they're signing.
You kind of have to read the room the second you walk in, and it's been a long time since I've done closings, but usually within a minute, you can tell, you know, if they need, if they want every document explained, or are they an investor who's done this 100 times and they just want to sign and get out and on to their next meeting. But for those first time home buyers or somebody who's in a situation like a divorce or something, they might have a lot of questions and they might really need you to take the time to go over everything and make them feel comfortable through the closing. So
true. Got to read the room.
Yes.
Know your audience.
So important.
Yes. Know your audience. Yes.
Know your audience.
Well, ladies, thank you so much. Thank you.
It's been amazing and a real education for us. Okay. So we hope that our listeners gather that as well.
Okay. Yeah.
And we just want to say to the listeners, please like and follow us on social media and on YouTube. And share this episode with a friend if you think they're getting ready to purchase a house, or you know they've had a bad experience, or you just, you know, need to educate a friend. Send it, please. Share it.
And we want to thank Gershman Mortgage for allowing us to record here. And we want to thank Great American Title for being our premier sponsor.
Yes.
Thank you,
Great American.
Thank you for partnering with us. We appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye. Find today's full video by searching the Simply Authentic Podcast on YouTube. Hit subscribe, and there you will find full videos of every episode.